Welcome to Meta Strategies Forum on World Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Randy Kratowski to the broadcast. Randy is Vice President and Chief Information Officer of Caterpillar. He has responsibility for Caterpillar's Global Information Services Division, which includes the corporation's IT systems and global security. Prior to his time at Caterpillar, Randy worked at Chevron Corporation, where he was Chief Information Officer for Chevron's worldwide exploration and production business. He was responsible for the company's global IT strategy and IT operations in 29 countries. Prior to being named CIO, his career at Chevron included IT positions with responsibility for Chevron subsidiaries in Canada, Latin America, and global strategic planning for Chevron Corporation. Randy is a native of Toronto, Canada, and he graduated from the University of Toronto with a bachelor's degree in chemical engineering. He earned an MBA from Golden Gate University in San Francisco. I recently caught up with Randy in his office in Peoria, Illinois, and our conversation centered on his first 90 to 100 days as CIO, as this is part of an ongoing series both here in the Forum on World Class IT, as well as in my Technovation column in Forbes. You'll note a distinct emphasis on Principle 1, people, as Randy described some of the personnel moves that were necessary, and Principle 4, IT and business partnerships, as Randy took steps to build relationships with his colleagues across the company in his first 90 to 100 days. The Forum on World Class IT is brought to you by Red Hat, the world's leading open source solutions provider. Learn more at redhat.com. Caterpillar about a year ago, after nearly a decade at Chevron, and though you had several senior roles at Chevron and had the opportunity to think about new plans and kind of your first 90 days of operation in those different settings and those different roles, this was your first opportunity to do so in a brand new company in quite some time. And I was wondering, how did you develop those initial plans in a new company, a new culture, even a new industry for you?
Yeah, you know, and actually it was 3 decades. I think you said 1 decade. It was 3 decades at Chevron. Yeah, I worked right out of college, so this was a pretty dramatic change for me. But, you know, in reality, it wasn't a whole lot different from the job changes I did at Chevron. I mean, absolutely, you know, this one, new people, new industry, those were big areas of learning. But, you know, in any role, I kind of go into a role and say, you know, what does the company need from me? I head up IT here, and so the question is, given where Caterpillar is going, given how Caterpillar wants to compete in the future, given the companies that we compete against, what does the company need from IT? And then, you know, where are we now and where do we need to be, and start putting those plans together. I think so the same questions that I would ask in any given job. The hard part here was, you know, figuring out I didn't know anybody. I don't know manufacturing. I know much more of it now. And probably the toughest part, knowing the culture and the history of the company. My 90-day plan included the normal things. I huge emphasis on getting out and meeting people to learn their business, to build those relationships, to help them explain Caterpillar to me, help them explain the strategy, because, you know, so I can be a better decision maker, a better leader. So, you know, I started my education that way. The really challenging part, though, was learning Caterpillar's history, culture, and legacy. You know, this is a great company. It's talked about, you know, everybody you talk to says, you know, Caterpillar's an iconic company. But there's really not a whole lot. I actually went back and read anything I could find on Caterpillar's history. I got a book from 1926 even. This is a company that has a proud and really, really deep and strong legacy. And it's very, very evident here. I mean, the culture here is just captures you very, very quickly. But for me, I think that my biggest challenge moving into this role is if I want to do anything, if I want to make any changes, if I want to move us to a new place in terms of competing through technology, it has to be built on what this company already is. It has to be built on what the culture is here. And so learning that was probably the trickiest part and pretty amazing. I mean, I spent 29 and a half years at Chevron and literally consciously decided not to leave Chevron ever. September of 2011. I was announced as the CIO of Caterpillar in December 2011, so those decisions don't seem to hold. But when you come and visit Caterpillar, I mean, it's the quality of the leadership, the business focus, the quality of the people, the culture was just pretty powerful. And like I said, the opportunity for technology was pretty exciting.
So you mentioned you read all that you could, and you began to seek the counsel of your fellow leaders across the organization. Can you tell us a bit more about those conversations, how you structured them, the kinds of questions you asked? And I'd also be interested, as a follow-up question, who outside the organization, were there other people outside of Caterpillar whose counsel you sought?
My initial discussions with the business leaders around the company are pretty similar to the discussions I continue. And one is, you know, tell me about your business. What is your strategy? What are your challenges? Who are your competitors? What are you trying to do? Because, you know, I'm trying to figure out, one is I'm trying to understand what Caterpillar's business is much deeper, and then also understand how technology can play a role to help Caterpillar be more successful. So that was kind of the focus of those initial discussions. Also, some discussions about what do I need to pay attention to? What's really important to this company that I may not be aware of, so that I can be as effective as possible in them. And that was really, really good. And then going outside, I started building relationships with some of Caterpillar's dealers and some of Caterpillar's customers. I had an interesting advantage in that I used to be a customer of Caterpillar's customers. My first half of my career, I built like offshore platforms and oil field facilities. So companies like Kiewit or other companies that are large construction firms or engineering procurement and construction firms, I worked with. And so I struck up a relationship with a couple companies outside Caterpillar that are Caterpillar customers and say, you know, so what do you think about Caterpillar? What does Caterpillar need to be doing? How can we work with you more effectively? Are there places where you'd be willing to help us in terms of thinking through how our technology can help you do your business better? And then the same thing on the dealer side. We have a network of 190 independent dealers who are entrepreneurial, who are intensely customer-focused, who are incredibly great business people. And many of them are second or third or generation. And so I spent a lot of time getting to know some of the dealers and what their view was from what technology needs to do, how they see the challenges in executing the model that we have with Caterpillar and an independent dealer network, and as well as just kind of learning the history. And the book I have from 1926 is called Across the Table. And it's really the first Caterpillar book when they sat down with their dealers and said, this is what it takes for Caterpillar and the dealers to work effectively together.
I heard you correctly earlier that these are the same sorts of steps you would undertake no matter the new role or responsibility you have, whether it was the various roles you had in Chevron or now expanding into a new company in a new industry.
Yeah, I mean, the steps were the same. Or I guess the steepness of my learning curve was a little different.
How did you gauge success? Were there some metrics or key performance indicators that you put in place and monitored from the outset?
So I had a set of objectives for my first 90 days and my first year. Nothing really quantifiable that you can measure in terms of how are you performing. I mean, my goal was to, you know, one, understand the business so that I could help it be more successful. Two, build some credibility in the organization. Because if you think of my ability to get things done, I have to have credibility or I won't be listened to. Some of my objectives were making sure that I had involved myself in the key initiatives and could speak intelligently about them, which I did. One of my goals early on that put together the first 90-day plan is I wanted to get to a point where we had our IT strategy was getting long in the tooth. The last one we put together was a number of years ago, so I wanted to have a fresh strategy. So just accomplishing that and getting business support for that strategy was a key sort of metric. If I could, it's one thing to develop a strategy with your business partners. It's a whole other thing to have it well supported by the organization, for us, the executive office, and by our board. And in December, I had the opportunity to present the strategy to the board and got wholehearted support for that. And so those types of things tell me that I'm doing the things to help me be successful at Caterpillar. At the same time, I'm doing those things to help me be successful with the agenda that I'm bringing to Caterpillar, which is really helping Caterpillar compete even more effectively through technology.
You mentioned that strategic plan. Can you share a bit of the substance of that, what some of the early priorities were and the degree which you accomplished those?
There's no real early priorities, I think. So I had you know, like a one-year plan, and then I have my strategic plan. Our strategic plan is really targeted to get us to where we need to be around 2018. I could talk about some of the things that we're doing that are aligned with it. So, I mean, we're developing the plan. We're also shifting our focus and emphasis inside the organization because most strategic plans aren't inventing things that are brand new that nobody's ever seen before. It's really helping the organization focus on three or four areas that if they get those right will help them be an incredibly stronger competitor in the marketplace. If we look at how we were using information technology, we were starting to focus more on how can we help our customers with technology solutions that would help them use our equipment more productively. And we've been sort of going down that path for a number of years, but we didn't have the right level of emphasis and focus on it is how I describe it. We've been making huge progress, and in some of our businesses, significant progress. But when you looked across the entire enterprise, helping our customers use our equipment more productively was an aspiration, but we didn't have all the necessary plans behind it. What capabilities did we have to have in place? What technologies did we need to be looking at? And so that is a big chunk of our strategy. And so last year, one of our key projects and something that we're now working with our dealers is an advanced condition monitoring system. The name's going to be Caterpillar Equipment Care Advisor, that allows our dealers to monitor a number of parameters on all the equipment on a construction site and identify when there's going to be a problem before the problem occurs, so they can take the equipment out of service, provide services to it, and minimize the lost productivity on a work site. You know, another one is looking at greater business agility. I mean, the economic upturns and downturns in the last few years have really drilled home for us how important it is for us to have a responsive supply chain. And so we're looking at a number of projects that we had underway that were designed to drive greater productivity and efficiency in our supply chain. But we're now saying, can we get greater agility out of these projects as well? Do we need to make some changes? And then a big focus on workforce productivity. In particular, our equipment is getting more complex. Our Tier 4 engines are great engines. They're higher horsepower, lower emission engines, but they're technically more complex. We're looking at how can we put more technical information into the hands of the dealer technicians that are out in the field that have to maintain and support this stuff. So how do we push it out on a mobile platform and those types of things? And then, of course, we have the core IT stuff where much stronger focus on uninterrupted operations. From a manufacturing standpoint, there's a level of reliability you need to have in your systems to be able to run the plant. Systems can go down for a while and your plant keeps running. As we're doing real-time, getting real-time information off machines, as we're moving into autonomous haulage, which is essentially robot trucks, you don't have the ability to have anything go down ever. And so we're looking at a number of things in that space as well.
You know, one of the first steps that typically new executives go through is an evaluation of their team, since in many ways they're only going to be as successful as the team is strong. And I'm curious, how did you evaluate the talent upon arrival within the IT team? And you know, were there changes you felt you need to make in terms of org structure or anything more specifically than that?
A large part of the initial conversations with other leaders were not just about, I mean, a big chunk of it was their business and Caterpillar. Some of it was, what's their perception of IT and what did they see for the IT leaders that they interacted with? What are their strengths and what are their weaknesses? You know, my view is there's no perfect leader. I mean, every leader has their strengths and their weaknesses. And the great leaders know this, and they play to their strengths, and they make sure they're surrounded by people who are very different from them, who can do all the things that they can't do well. I did some of that. I spent a lot of time with my leaders last year. And I did make some changes, and the changes were driven by the strategy. You know, once we have a strategy, and it is a strategy that is much more externally facing, it is more marketplace facing, it's more focused on how we compete through technology. Then I started looking at, well, which of my leaders have strengths in for each of the roles? Because we also structured the organization a little bit different. I did a top-level reorganization. I didn't do a wholesale reorganization, but I shifted some things around to be more in line with, I think, how Caterpillar is running their business today, with much clearer accountability. So I cleaned some things up, and then I looked for, you know, who's got strengths for a particular role. Some of my leaders are exceptionally good at running large-scale operations. And so if you think of IT, there's a big part of what we do, which is like running a factory. So data centers, email, PCs, PC replenishment, you know, the core IT stuff is just someplace where operational excellence is the key to success. And so I've got some leaders that are just passionate about trying for a level of excellence across security, reliability, service quality, and cost. And so my goal is to get those leaders into those jobs. At the same time, I've got a set of leaders that are more passionate about how's technology changing our business. What can I do to help that be successful? And so I've got them in roles, in leadership roles, more focused on our manufacturing supply chain area, our engineering area, worksite area, you know, some productivity tools. And so trying to split, you know, who are those leaders who are exceptionally strong with business transformation skills, and who are those leaders exceptionally strong with operational excellence skills, make sure everybody's got a job that one, they could be good at, but two, that'll stretch the living daylights out of them and grow them as leaders.
You are a year in. As you look back and reflect upon the early stages, are there things you would do differently? Are there insights you have now, understandably, because you've got a greater depth in the role that you might have focused on differently at the outset?
I wouldn't have done a whole lot of things differently. I think that Caterpillar, and well, every company is a unique company, and getting to know that company before you take action is absolutely crucial. Otherwise, I think you run the risk of setting yourself back significantly. You know, if I think through what I would have done differently, I would have planned my vacation when I started. The issue was, so I worked for Chevron up through January 31st. Chevron is a great company. I wasn't going to just, you know, when I was offered this job, I wasn't just going to walk away and immediately starting focus on this. I had to make sure that transition was in place. So I literally worked till January 31st for Chevron, got on a plane, started here February 1st. So no break. And you know, probably the one thing I would have changed, it would have been nice to have a little bit of time early on to kind of get your head together and through that transition. I think that just from the standpoint of how intense it was those first few months and the impact on my family as I basically became consumed in the new role.
Right. I mean, it's a really very important and very interesting point, I think, the need to kind of debrief and have some time off before you kind of embark on the new challenge, which understandably is going to be, given all the newness and the new relationships you're building, the insights you're drawing that you've pointed out throughout the conversation, that kind of preparing yourself mentally for that might be an advantageous thing.
Yeah, and like I said, I probably would have done a little bit of educating myself, which would have accelerated some of those early conversations because I might have understood some of the acronyms and
exactly.
A little bit more about manufacturing. And
you've talked a bit about the strategy, of course, and you've talked about the customer centricity. I thought that was actually really interesting, that one of the departures from the past, and you mentioned that the IT strategy was in need of some refreshing, and so as you had reason with your new role to cast a new set of eyes across that, one of the things through your conversation that occurred to you was that making the IT plan much more customer-centric than it had been in the past, presumably it had been more internally focused previously. Can you tell us a bit more about kind of your priorities going forward or where you see things changing and technology's ability to impact this business over the course of the next several years?
Since I worked in California a couple times, I'll use a surfing analogy. A view I've held for many, many years is that in information technology, timing is really important. Probably with many things, timing is really, really important. But if you act too early, you tend to spend a lot of money and not really get to where you need to get to. If you act too late, you kind of miss the wave. And if you look at industries, and what I like to pay attention to is what's going on in the industry we're in and the industries we serve. Because we're really not a consumer company, so otherwise I'd also look at consumers. But what's happening in the industry we're in and the industries we serve as well as, and what's affecting it? And if you look at what's going on right now, one of the advantages I have coming into this role from Chevron is I spent the last 5 years in a resource industries company focusing on how technology is changing oil fields. And I spent an intense amount of time, and if you think about it, an oil field, not a whole lot different from a construction site or a mine site. I mean, there are pretty substantial differences, but if you look at the technologies that are deployed into those sites, they're actually quite similar. And if you look at the economics of our customers, the construction firms, the mining firms, the quarry firms, you know, every company has done as much as they can on productivity from people and process and management and structure and have driven that very, very hard. And if you look at the industries we serve, they haven't leveraged information technology very much yet to drive the next level of productivity. And so that's going on. At the same time, if you look at us as a manufacturer, we've got great manufacturing systems that have been in place for many years. We also have projects underway to refresh the technologies, but supply chain agility is becoming more and more important to us. So looking at what's going on in the industry we're in and the industries we serve, you suddenly realize, you know, IT is playing a much bigger role in helping companies perform. And so that's where we kind of started and then figured out, well, so what role do we need to play in being successful? And from a Caterpillar perspective, we have an incredible dealer network that is hugely powerful. We view it as a competitive edge. We're vertically integrated that gives us the ability to design and build a higher quality product with greater control over what finally goes into that product so that we get a great quality product at a great price and we get the products to our customers that they need. And we're looking at how can we help our customers use, some of our stuff is reasonably expensive, how can they use it more effectively and operate more productively? And for me, it's no different than the oil industry. It's now taken to mining, and then it's going to go to construction, and it'll be driven by economics. And so if you look at my priorities, one is I have a very large internal project focusing on manufacturing supply chain that is enormous and is having a huge, huge impact on Caterpillar. So I put that number one on my list because it has to be successful. It will give us a competitive edge in some areas, and if we're not successful, it'll break the company. you know, any project like that is going to capture a big chunk of my attention, absolutely. Now, that said, we're about to do our biggest facility in the not-too-distant future, and all signs are looking reasonably good. So as good as you can get on a large technology project like this. Second one is the customer-facing technologies. And there, it's a big, we have to make some shifts in terms of how we're developing. And I learned in my last job that we have to start looking at some things that are going on in the technology world, the technology companies are doing. So the companies like Workday or Salesforce, who are developing in the cloud and are looking at service-oriented architectures, agile development, so a whole bunch of concepts that have been maturing over the last decade. We have to start looking at how do we use some of those to provide, you know, speed. We'll be providing our customers literally commercial software solutions. So we've got to bring in a set of capabilities that we have to build to be able to deliver against what our business wants to deliver in the mining and construction and power systems industries. Further down the list is working with our dealers. We have 190 independent dealers. If you think about agility, we have to be integrated. So we're, again, learning from some of what other tech companies have done, as well as some of our peers, the automotives. What are they doing to better integrate across their dealers and provide a more seamless experience of data sharing? Because, you know, we sell the engines for ships. Ships tend to go outside of a dealer's territory. So how do we actually ensure we have a consistent level of service and support for that customer as it crosses multiple dealers, and that requires a level of information integration. And then, of course, just the core IT, make sure we run it well each and every day.
Okay, Randy, I really appreciate you taking this time to walk through this. Are there other facets of how you've kind of run things that hasn't naturally come out through the conversation that you would want to cover?
You know, my leaders feel that I've changed a fair number of things, and it's mostly an issue of style and what I think is important. So another thing that I sort of a philosophy I put together a decade ago is, you know, so my title is Vice President of Global Information Services and CIO. I see those as two very different roles. CIO, I am accountable for anything and everything related to information and information technology across the entire corporation, whether I have control of it or not. And so in some cases, I have to exert control through policies, for example, on security. In some cases, it actually is in my organization, but if you think about the role of the CIO, it's a challenging role just running IT, but I view it as my job is I've got to be working with my business partners to understand how's technology going to impact our business, and it could be from an opportunity perspective, like in our worksite solutions, or it could be in a threat perspective. I see that as my primary job. And then the other one is the VP of our Global Information Services organization. I have IT, I have security, physical and IT security, which I think is a really good model. Then I have aviation. I got to run a business. And I think part of what I don't see in a lot of IT organizations, and I got to run a business that has, it's not, I don't sell into the marketplace, and so my revenue isn't quite the same as a regular business, but I've got to run my business like a business. I have to have metrics and milestones, and I have to have benchmarks, and I have to understand workforce planning, leadership development. I have to do all of those things. And one of the things we're trying to do in this role is I think that IT had gotten very, very responsive. It was very intensely focused on ensuring our business ran, very, very cost-focused. I think there's a broad slate of things you have to look at as a business and that we have to run against those metrics and milestones. And so we're tightening up some of the operational discipline and a very clear sort of, not management model, probably the best way to describe it is, I call it an operating rhythm. There's another company, it's a competitor of CAT, who's talked a lot about an operating rhythm. But we're trying to drive to much more of a cadence. If you look at the clock speed of IT, it moves much more quickly than many of the other functions. And I think that the operating and management practices, when I think about running like a business, I have to put in place a set of practices, business practices around the way I operate IT that allows me to run at a much higher clock speed than the rest of our business. So that's the other area of focus for me, because, you know, in IT, you got to be good, and you have to keep up. And you fall too far behind, and it takes a long time to catch back up. And so that's a big focus of ours now. So we're getting our leaders talk about, you know, what does the IT function of the future look like, and how do we start making sure that we're putting elements of that in place.
That's great. Really, I think, fantastic insights. Were you hired in as the head of Global Information?
No. So I was hired into the role that I'm in now. So it was the CIO and VP of Global Information Services. And so I just I like the fact that my title had those two roles split out because I mentally split them anyway. Quite often, the CIOs, I mean, they run IT, right? I just like splitting those two roles because I think they call for different things. Probably the last one I should probably put on the list, though. You know, I'm very focused on legacy as well. I mean, I'll get an X number of years to do this job, and I think it's important for me to absolutely, you know, run today's business, deliver the projects that are going to help us be successful in the next 5 to 7 years. But more importantly, when I leave this job, are there a set of leaders who can step in behind me with confidence and can be better than me? I mean, because my views of the technology space is, I think it's really complicated now. I think it's going to be far more complex 5 or 7 years from now when my successor comes in behind me. And they're going to have to be a stronger leader than I am, and I have to make sure I can prepare better leaders than I am. And make sure that we have the company at a place where we're ready for, you know, what we're going to hit in the 5 or 7 years after that or the decade after that. So I started thinking about that the first 90 days, too. But, you know, if you don't start thinking about that, it's so easy to suddenly realize you're 5, 7 years into your job, then you start thinking about legacy. You really don't have time to put anything substantial in place.
Okay, great. Well, Randy, I really do appreciate you taking this time. I think some great insights here.
The Forum on World Class IT would like to thank Red Hat, the world's leading provider of open source solutions, for being our corporate sponsor. Red Hat uses a community-powered approach to provide reliable, secure, and high-performing cloud virtualization, storage, Linux, and middleware technologies. To learn more, visit redhat.com. Just listen to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategy's Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategy's 5 principles of World Class IT. The 5 principles are as follows. Principle 1 is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The 2nd principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The 3rd principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The 4th principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the 3 prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The 5th and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the 4th principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these 5 principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Arman. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.